across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlow.
Well, if you say so, Don, thank you so much. Hey there, Wisconsin. Good morning. Welcome to the beautiful state of Wisconsin Sense on the shores of Lake Wissota, where it's another gorgeous day up north. It is Monday, July 10th, 69 degrees up here on Lake Wissota, 59 in Waukesha, Wausau reporting 66, Turtle Lake 64, Junction City 64, and in Plymouth, it is 65 degrees. Here's what's coming up on tap this morning. A Dane County judge on Friday afternoon said it was her interpretation that a controversial 1849 law does not actually apply to elective abortions and is superseded by a 1985 abortion rights law. Dr. Kristen Lyerly, our friend here, is one of the interveners in the case, and she joins us in about 25 minutes with a progress report as the lawsuit challenging that ban takes a big step forward. Also, Sherita Booker joins us in less than 10 minutes to review some of the most clicked stories on the Up North News social media sites. And before we're done today, we'll talk to Civic Media News Director Terry Bell about three things to know to start the week. Along the way, if you'd like to reach us in the studio, the line is 844-967-2789. And you can email us radio at upnorthnewswi.com. Or you can watch us on a whole series of social media pages if you can't be near your local Civic Media radio station. We are on the Up North News YouTube page. We're on Twitter, and then we're on a host of Facebook pages, not just the Up North News Facebook page, but Civic Media and Bull Falls Radio in Wausau. And now, as of this morning, the Facebook page for our home base in the Chippewa Valley, 93.5 The Tap. So plenty of places to catch Up North News Radio, and we're happy to have you wherever you are joining us on this fine Monday morning. Aaron Zommers is joining us from Madison. How are you? How's the weekend?
Doing well. Yeah, had a nice weekend. Saw the family, including my niece, Gracie, who is now 5 years old. She's now this many, I say, holding up my hand.
And you did hold up the right number of fingers. Yes. So who has a bad fifth birthday party? It's the coolest, you know? Five is cool.
Yeah, definitely. And it's at the age where they're going to start remembering it, where, for one example, one thing she got is a necklace that she picked out a few months ago. And when she opened it up, my mom was like, "Hey, do you remember this?" And she's like, "Yeah, I picked this one." And if she was even a year younger, she might not have remembered that.
Mm-hmm. It is very cool when they do that. So, well, I'm glad that was fun. Sounds like a great time and gorgeous weather up here. A change in the weather is definitely coming later today, and we'll get the weatherology forecast just over an hour from now, where, you know, some of us are going to hit 90 today, but then that's the last 90 for a while. Showers, thunderstorms, that threat going to roll in. So look for more of that coming up in a bit. I was telling you that I apologize in advance. I might roll right off screen from time to time, or he might hear my office chair clunking. I decided to invest in a better floor mat because I've had a couple of these plastic ones, even ones that say heavy duty, but over time they start to curl on the ends and then you trip on them or they crack or whatever. And some of these glass-based ones were on sale, so I decided to splurge and get that. But now it's completely the opposite. I mean, it's like frictionless. So I mean, I put the chair with the wheels on there, and it takes nothing to just flip right off of here. So I will try to keep as close to the microphone as I can, but that may come at a price. And I'm still thanks to you, Mr. Zommer, still vacuuming up glitter confetti.
Hey, on my rug. The glitter is not my fault. I had nothing to do with the glitter.
Just all of you who are part of the conspiracy, I blame you all. But it occurred to me as I was vacuuming again to lay down this glass mat and still finding it, I said, I think I ought to embrace this. I think I ought to just go back to, you know, the little bag of glitter confetti and sprinkle it underneath where the glass chair mat would be. And that way it would look like a sparkly dance floor. It would always be a party. Always a party in the office here where you see the glitter underneath the, I don't know if that's a good idea or not, but like I said, still going to be vacuuming that up for the longest time. Over at the Up North News Daily Newsletter, that just came out as it does 5 a.m. every morning. Included in there is an article about what people say is the top tourist trap in Wisconsin. And that doesn't necessarily mean in a negative connotation. It's something that where you go, yeah, I got to stop there. What do you think that is? What is the top tourist trap where you just can't avoid it? You have to be there. You can't just drive right past it. Well, you'll find that in the newsletter, and maybe we'll talk about that later on today. Also, I have a new editorial in there about the push to loosen child labor laws. And we're going to talk about that in our 7 o'clock hour and the potentially deadly consequences that it might bring. Over on the Up North News social media site, we have the interview that I took with Danielle Whitaker. She's of the Bristol School District and talked about what's it like to be a new school board member and to learn the complexities of the school funding system and realize it is so inadequate. It is so messed up. And you try to earnestly convey that to certain legislators and how it felt that they recognize it and they just don't care to listen and to hear what she has to say about it. Also on our social media posts of camera video or body cam video of the Sturgeon Bay police officer who recently ran into a burning barn and saved some cows that were inside from that barn fire. So look for all that on our Facebook and TikTok, Twitter, and Instagram feeds. All right, we'll take a break, tell you about the Brewers wrapping up the first half of the season, heading into the All-Star break, that and much more next. You're up north. Not, it's a remix. Give it another couple of seconds and you'll go, oh, it's that song. There it is. A little summer breeze on a breezy morning after a very breezy, downright windy Sunday across much of Wisconsin, Saturday too. Coming up tomorrow, Lee Rush, the longtime head of the Western Wisconsin Technical College in La Crosse. He's now active with a group we first told you about in March, a bipartisan group called Keep Our Republic, a group that's dedicated to bipartisan voter education about how America's elections and Wisconsin's election system are already safe, already secure, already accurate, already strong, and that anybody who's trash-talking that, undermining it, doesn't have the facts on their side. Now, they might be parroting something that they heard, or their motivations might be a little darker. And we'll talk to Lee Rush about the continuing effort to defend democracy, something I never thought we'd have to do in our lifetimes, but is essential between now and the 2024 presidential election. Time for sports at 6:17. Wade Miley pitched six strong innings, and the Brewers made a first inning run stand up in a 1-0 win over the Cincinnati Reds on Sunday. There was a lot of drama in that game. There've been so many either slugfests or lead changes. I don't even know the last time that we sat through a nail biter 1-0 win, but regardless, the Brewers head into the All-Star break, 7 games above 500, 49 wins, 42 losses. And they are just 1 game behind the Reds heading into the division, and the Reds have had an amazing past, six, eight weeks or so. But Milwaukee did take 2 out of 3 games in this series. Christian Yelich led off the Brewers' half of the first with a ground rule double to extend his hitting streak to 9 games. And then Yelich would score on Jesse Winker's 2-out single to center field. Now, the thing that I really liked about this game, apart from the drama and what was really a pitcher's duel for a while, is that it ended 2 hours and 4 minutes after it began. 2 hours and 4 minutes. Don't tell me there's something wrong with these new rules. That was the shortest game since the ballpark opened in 2001. It actually matched the record. It was also done in 2006 between the Brewers and the Dodgers, 2 hours and 4 minutes. And by the way, we haven't mentioned this for, you know, I mentioned it 17 days ago. I said, we're, you know, the Brewers are heading into a 17-day streak, 17 games in a row, home and away, before the All-Star break. So that wraps up 17 games without a day off. And manager Craig Counsell had high praise for the team's relievers. They really did a great job, he said, really proud of them. They'd been warriors going through this every day. And the whole matchup between the Reds and the Brewers, it's not done yet. Again, the Brewers only one game behind the Reds, but that could change a week from now when we're sitting here, because when the All-Star break ends, the Brewers will go to Cincinnati for a three-game series that starts on Friday. If you're listening to your favorite Civic Media radio stations next weekend and want to hear the Brewers playing the Reds, you can hear them in the Fox Valley on Oshkosh Air Support, 98.3 and 1100 AM, or WRCE, News from the Center in Richland Center, 107.7, 1450. And let me say as well, for one, somebody that text messaged in and said, hey, how come I'm not hearing the Brewers game on the stream? That's a Major League Baseball rules thing. The game goes out over the radio, but that's not the same as streaming rights. So if you're listening to the stream, you're going to hear regular programming. If you want to hear the Brewers, you got to listen over your favorite Civic Media station. Now here's Sherita Booker, social media manager for Up North News. You can find what she's doing for us over on Instagram and on Facebook and all the other places, including, you know, Threads is like the big new thing. It started last week, Wednesday. I think it got like 10 million people in its first day or something like that. So, Sherita, you ready for one more platform to juggle?
As ready as I'll ever be, Pat.
I mean, honestly, it's a lot. If you tried to post to everything, I mean, to Mastodon and Post and everything else, and you know, it's crazy. And someday it's all going to settle out. But right now, we've got all these various platforms. People are looking for anything besides Twitter, and I don't blame them. So yeah, between you and I, we'll find a way to get things up on Threads and all that as well. But
yeah.
Threads itself comes from Meta, which gives us, it's actually based on your Instagram feed and your Instagram contacts. So we actually have three different Instagram posts we're going to talk about in terms of, you know, what people are clicking on and what they're reacting to and things like that. And I have to say, Sherita, after I don't know how many decades of Rick Steves doing travel programs on public television, he still clearly has a following, and people liked seeing that, you know, he was in Wisconsin doing a little traveling not long ago.
Yeah. So travel expert Rick Steven believes that Milwaukee Mitchell International is a convenient and easy airport to travel from. And me and Pat can both agree. Nothing beats the recombobulation area, because after you go through TSA, you need somewhere to put your shoes back on, gather yourself. And all airports do not offer that.
They do not. And I know I'm not the first or the last person who got such a hearty laugh out of seeing that sign, the recombobulation area. And of course, our friend Dan Schaefer has now turned that into a cottage industry, calling his news outlet the recombobulation area. It reminds me that we had a story not that long ago where, you know, Mitchell Field got kind of these low marks on one travel site. And I think a lot of us agreed that that didn't sound justified at all. Nope. I don't live in Milwaukee anymore, but I love MKE. You do as well.
I do. And I live right, like, well, just a few miles from it. Sometimes I go to O'Hare, but I really prefer not to. It's just too big, too crowded. I have to be in a hurry. Milwaukee is just so much better, easy, convenient. It's quick. It's not ever super crowded. I just love it so much. I don't understand why it got such low ratings.
No. And again, most people that I'm aware of would give it extremely high ratings, knowing full well that you may have to go someplace else. But here's the thing. People love flying out of Milwaukee or Eau Claire or Madison or Mozanie because, and it could be other airports too, but the four that I have, you know, most familiarity with, because you have virtually no security line. You don't have that mile-long line in. And once you're there, you're in the system. So you could either go to O'Hare or go to Twin Cities International, expensive parking, wait forever, or you could just drive right up to MKE or Eau Claire and, you know, get in, get out. And yeah, it's one extra little flight, but I, like I said, that's a, it's a great airport.
Yeah, one of my faves.
And it also takes me back to the Midwest Express days and those fresh chocolate chip cookies they used to serve on board. And I'm sorry to sound like an old man, but I mean, could we please return to the good old days of fresh baked cookies on an airplane? Is that really too much to ask? Anyway,
it's not.
Somehow I've gotten far afield of Rick Steves, except to say that, again, he had nice things to say about MKE. And clearly, based on, you know, well over 1,000 likes for that post, a lot of people agreed with him. So, Rick, if you're listening, come on back through anytime. Let's turn to something that was a bit more in the news vein as far as one of our more popular posts. And that was, you know, President Biden getting a setback from the U.S. Supreme Court on the topic of forgiving, you know, student loan debt, but he's not just rolling over. He's looking for other ways to deal with this, I guess, right?
Yeah. So he's working on a new path to provide student debt relief to as many borrowers as possible, but he did say it may take a while.
And that's true. I mean, it's an approach that is going to involve creating basically an on-ramp with U.S. Department of Education on, you know, repayments. And it's going to take some time. But as I talked about with Scott Ross last week, it is such a, you know, an economic stimulus boost to an entire swath of young middle-class families who would then use that money, you know, not stick it in their pocket. They're not going to buy a yacht with it like you would for the Republican legislators' tax cut. You know, it'll go right to work buying a first house or buying a first car. And yeah, again, between the likes and the comments, Sharita, it looks like we saw a lot of engagement with that post.
Absolutely. And I haven't even touched my student loan debt since I graduated in 2021, thanks to Biden's plan. So hopefully he gets that going, so I don't have to even touch it still.
No, because again, if that education and then the paycheck that came from it can, you know, be used more in the local economy instead of being sent off to Wall Street, well, hey, all the better for us. So now our third and final one here. I have to ask, since I made up this particular post here, had you heard of Bobby Bonilla before we did Bobby Bonilla Day on July 1st?
I have not, but reading it, I'm like, wow, that's kind of ridiculous.
It is. For folks not familiar, Bobby Bonilla was a superstar player with the New York Mets. And this was back in the year 2000, where, you know, the Mets were a little tight on cash. They weren't all that liquid. They certainly wanted to re-sign their star. And they said, hey, how about we defer these payments? And so basically a $6 million contract actually paid him out, or will eventually pay him out, to the tune of $29 million, because they're paying him $1 million a year every July 1st from now until he turns like 72 years old, if I remember right. And, you know, that comes right out of the Mets payroll. So that's $1 million they didn't have to spend this year on current players. They had to send it instead to a guy who hasn't played in 20 years. Sharita, maybe you take the deal, maybe I take the deal, but it's become like a running joke in baseball, you know?
Yeah, he really got the good end of the stick there.
He did.
He really lucked out.
And how'd you like the Milwaukee Brewer tie-in with that?
I mean, they're in a similar situation. That's pretty, another ridiculous situation.
Yeah, with Christian Yelich, when he renegotiated his 9-year, $215 million contract, they agreed to deferring about $30 million of that $215 million. And so Christian Yelich is going to get $1 million once a year from the years 2031 till the year 2042, long after Yelich's playing days are over. And here was the interesting part in the post. Yelich's agent and Mark Adonasio, the Brewers owner, they couldn't agree on whether that $1 million check would come to a retired Christian Yelich at the end of each baseball season or on January 1st. And for whatever reason, they agreed to go with Bobby Bonilla Day. And so it's going to be July 1st first. They kind of split the difference. So that's, you know, why we're going to talk about Bobby Bonilla Day for a few more years, and then Christian Yelich. Sarita Booker, thank you so much. We appreciate everything you do posting on our social media sites. Coming up next, Dr. Kristen Lyerly is going to join us, and we're going to talk more about that somewhat surprising Friday afternoon ruling and what it means for the legal challenge to Wisconsin's 1849 abortion ban. And is it really an abortion ban after all? That's coming up next here up north.
Follow Up North News online anytime. Search Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter for Up North News WI and our homepage, upnorthnewswi.com.
Just another gorgeous summer weekend here in Wisconsin. How nice to be here in Wisconsin compared to where other people could be, like, I don't know, the suffering through triple digits in the desert Southwest or something like that. Kristen Lyerly joins us now from the desert Southwest. Kristen, how are you?
Good, but I sure wish I was home in Wisconsin. This is my favorite time to be in Wisconsin.
I know, and instead you're running away to beat the heat, you know, or running to get to, probably running from an air-conditioned car to an air-conditioned building, you know, the way that we do in the wintertime with heated cars and heated buildings. But
it's true. It's really hot. I'm spending as much time as I can by the pool. But, you know, I like hot. Mm-hmm. Yesterday I had to come in. I couldn't take it.
Yeah, it's a lot after a while, you know, when you're on vacation in the winter, it's like, oh, this is glorious. But no, there's some a point of diminishing return on all of these things. All right. Now, to nobody's, you know, anybody who listens to the show will not be surprised that we're going to be talking about the 1849 abortion law, especially since the judge hearing a legal challenge to it said something very unique in ruling on a motion about the 1849 law, which we've been referring to as an 1849 abortion ban. And Judge Diane Schlipper basically said, in so many words, there's no such thing as an 1849 abortion ban because of the way that she is interpreting the law. Now, this is not the final step in the legal challenge, not even close to it. But the fact that she even said this while ruling on a motion to dismiss the lawsuit, I thought that was earth-shattering, Kristen. I thought it was groundbreaking.
She hinted at this during the trial. Mm-hmm. And I felt like this was, you know, we thought this was the case really from the beginning. So it wasn't that big of a surprise, but it was the way that she was so forthright. Like, this doesn't even matter. This is about feticide. This is not about consensual abortion, which is what we've been thinking the entire time, that this law is not relevant. So to be very honest, it was incredibly reassuring to hear her ruling, and I hope it sticks.
Well, she made note as well that there are already other laws related to abortion on the books, including one from 1985 passed by the Wisconsin legislature. And again, not the final word on the case, but the way it seems to be telegraphed is that this 1985 law essentially says that Wisconsin women have essentially the same rights that they had under Roe v. Wade when that was in effect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, pretty much. I mean, that abortion is legal up until viability.
Mm-hmm. And that is something we should say is the case in many states. When the Supreme Court issued the Dobbs decision repealing Roe v. Wade, I mean, we obviously took it to the extreme here in Wisconsin because of the 1849 law. But what the Dobbs decision did was create a patchwork of states that where women have rights or they have restrictions. And Wisconsin was in kind of that murky area where it looks like there's a major restriction, but by the time this is all said and done, we may actually be one of the states where women have the same reproductive health rights that they had during Roe v. Wade. You're an intervener in the case. Can you explain to folks that didn't catch it the first time, what does that mean?
It just means that I am affected by this directly, obviously, or I would be home practicing in Wisconsin. So because this affects me directly, I got involved with this case on behalf of my colleagues who are all very much affected by this. I mean, let's be very honest. You can't take abortion out of women's healthcare. Abortion is integrated into every part of women's healthcare, whether we're talking about miscarriage management or infertility treatment or helping somebody with a complicated pregnancy. You just can't remove abortion. So my colleagues who are still practicing in Wisconsin are doing so with a lot of fear. They're doing the best that they can to take care of their patients, recognizing that one, not even a misstep, one thing that is picked up on by politicians could be pursued and could put them in jail, for actually having taken care of a patient. It's absolutely ridiculous. And so again, for that reason, we were all very much reassured by Judge Schlipper's ruling, and we are really looking forward to seeing what happens from here. The case itself is still ongoing. So all this did was say that that DA Ermansky's motion to not move forward with the case is not valid. So the case is still ongoing, and you know, we hope that we will win it. And this is not an enforceable law anymore in Wisconsin.
Yes, the ruling came on a motion to dismiss by the Sheboygan County District Attorney, who is one of the respondents in the case. And again, the lawsuit is asking a court in so many words, you know, which takes precedent? Can a DA like the one in Sheboygan County, could he criminally charge us, you know, under this 1849 law? And so the Sheboygan County DA filed a motion to dismiss. The judge last week said, no, we're not going to dismiss this. This case is going to move forward. And now she has perhaps telegraphed how she might rule on the overall lawsuit. But then it goes almost assuredly, however it goes, it will go to appeal. So an appeals court will hear it. And then the state Supreme Court is likely to hear it, which again, Kristen, comes back to just how crucial last April's Supreme Court election was.
It sure does. And as a doctor who just wants to take care of my patients, it's fascinating to watch how this is making its way through the legal system and how complicated it all is and how we're predicting that, well, this party is going to do this and that party is going to do that. And, you know, there are unknowns in the future. But the one thing I do know is that my colleagues and I recognize that this is not just about right now. This is about the future of medicine in Wisconsin, the future of being able to find a provider who's willing to take care of you, who's willing to work in Wisconsin in the midst of a physician crisis where things are worse as they often are in rural parts of Wisconsin.
And we should note, again, I feel like I'm giving legal disclaimers here, but just because Judge Schlipper was, it seemed to me rather clear in her interpretation of current law, it does not mean, I mean, there could still be curveballs. There could be something that she interprets along the way. So while this is, in my mind, still a very huge step, nobody should assume anything, especially in the legal system, and especially, frankly, in a politicized legal system that we have in this day and age.
Yeah, I mean, think of what happened, if you're not familiar with what happened with Dr. Caitlin Bernard in Indiana. This is the OBGYN doctor who took care of that little girl, that 10-year-old who was raped in Ohio, and she couldn't get an abortion in Ohio. So she went to Indiana, and Dr. Bernard did everything right to take care of her and provide her with exactly what she needed. She did all of the state reporting requirements. Everything was right on par. And she was pursued by the attorney general. And then she was pursued by the medical board in Indiana, where they ended up reprimanding and fining her after a trial that went over 12 hours, where the president of the American Medical Association was there, one of the people who had written the HIPAA law, because they were questioning whether she had violated this patient's privacy, testified on her behalf. All of these professionals came and testified on her behalf, and the licensing board still ended up punishing her for doing everything right. That's the punitive system that we're living in right now. And that's why doctors are really reluctant to practice in places where things are really, really hostile and unnecessarily so. politicians need to get out of our exam rooms. There's no place for politicians in your personal healthcare decision making.
And unfortunately, as we're seeing in that case and in others, the lack of what I might call, the rebel TV doctor mentality that's out there, where people say, yeah. Oh, we don't need these court cases and things because doctors always find a way to do what's got to be done, even if they bend the rules a little bit. And Kristen, that's TV. That's not real life at all.
It is TV. I have to tell you, I had a case recently where I had to perform an abortion for someone who was dying. And I was in Minnesota, so I knew I was safe. But I took a moment and thought to myself, what would I do right now if I was in Wisconsin? And I knew what I would do. I would save my patient's life, of course. But that gut feeling where you know that that right thing could get you in trouble, even though it is the right thing, that hero TV doctor, that doesn't feel good. That doesn't feel good, and nobody wants to be in that situation.
No, and again, that was you. There would be other doctors who ultimately would not, who would say, well, my hands are tied. You know, I don't want to be charged. I don't want to lose my license. And, you know, if there was a tragic outcome, they would be legally right to have done what they did, because what politicians did was not morally right by inserting themselves into healthcare.
But they would be caught between malpractice, not doing the right thing for the patient, and this ugly political lie. It puts us in impossible situations. Most of the doctors I know would choose to err on the side of their patient, but the danger, you know, the danger to our future. I mean, if we are charged with a felony, that's our future. That's our ability to earn money and take care of ourselves and our families. For what? Totally unnecessary.
Mm-hmm. So let me do a little legal speculation here, and you don't have to respond unless you want to correct or affirm anything I say. But for people going, well, you know, what does this mean from a timeline standpoint? All right, the judge ruled on the motion to dismiss the case and said, no, I'm not going to dismiss the case. The legal challenge is going to move on. It is almost guaranteed that whatever happens in this lawsuit, she's not likely to rule on it before August 1st. If for some reason she did, the state Supreme Court, which is still conservative controlled for another 3 weeks or so, theoretically could then pluck that case and say, you know, we're going to bypass the appeals court. We'll take it from here. And then they can rule however they want. Again, not likely to happen, but this conservative majority, this particular one, has done that already. With some other cases in the past where they have fast-tracked something or tried to fast-track something that wasn't necessary, but they wanted to rule on it right away, to my mind and many other people, they want to rule in a political way right away. Janet Protasiewicz taking that court August 1st means that whenever the case gets to them, they're going to face a court with a new justice who has said, I'm not going to say how I'll rule on a specific case, but she does believe in a woman's reproductive health care rights. And so, Kristen, long story short, sometime after August 1st, are you feeling better about the ultimate outcome of this case?
Of course. And like you said, it's really hard to know how this is all going to play out, especially for somebody who doesn't have a super a great understanding of the legal system. I mean, it's so complicated and so many different things could happen. But once we get to August 1st, I'm definitely feeling much more comfortable. You know, this has been such a horrible journey. We know that the people of Wisconsin believe in a woman's right to choose what is right for her own body, for her own family, within her own community. So the Republicans here are so off base, and hopefully they're starting to understand that, and they're starting to recognize that they really need to respond to their constituents and make sure that their constituents, that they're acting in the best interest of their constituents. I'm hopeful. I really feel hopeful that we're getting on the right track, not just with the abortion issue, but with so many other issues as well, Pat. After August 1st, that's going to be a giant milestone for all of us.
It really is, but I would caution folks again to take nothing for granted, because the people who have done this with a minority of support, and they know this. But as long as they've got power, they will continue to try to wield it. And that doesn't just include in the area of policy, but in the area of elections. And they have shown what they are willing to do to win elections or even potentially to overturn elections. And so it's something where everybody needs to continue to pay attention. Everybody needs to continue to exercise their right to vote and talk to their friends about it as well. Kristen, thanks for the update on the Syria situation, the very legal, very real situation. If you don't mind hanging around, we'll be less serious and we'll talk about some music and history.
If let's do will. Something fun.
All right, I think we'll do that then. More after this. You're up north. You've either been transported back to 1976 and a song that should have been called Nooner, but apparently they thought of Afternoon Delight instead. Or it's taken you back to watching the movie Anchorman. Either way, it's a win for me.
I think of all the times my friends and I sang this when we were little, not really getting it.
Not having any idea.
It was hilarious.
Yep. Yeah, some of those lyrics now you go, how did that sneak through? But it did. And so there it was, the number one song in America this day in 1976. 2 weeks at number one, but I mean, it was on the radio every 15 minutes, it felt like, that summer. And it was a good summer. It was the bicentennial summer. It was gorgeous. And you had this happy, upbeat song about sex. Yeah. On this day in 1999, a very iconic moment in sports, the U.S. women's national team defeated China in a penalty shootout at the Rose Bowl to win the final match of the FIFA World Cup. The winning penalty kick coming from Brandi Chastain, who then ripped off her jersey, waved it around, knelt, on the field and was swarmed by everybody. Kristen, you remember that? That was huge. That was huge for women's soccer.
Every time I put on a sports bra, I think of Brandi Chastain. Not going to lie.
She made that cool, you know? All right, let's see. In 1985, the summer big hit was Mel Gibson in Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome, where he starred along with Tina Turner. We got a lot of birthdays to share today. Greg Kinn of the Greg Kinn Band. Remember Jeopardy? He is 74 years old today, a native of Baltimore. The lead singer of Rascal Flatts, Gary LaVox, is 53. An Ohio native. His actual name is Gary Wayne Vernon, but it came out Gary LaVox when he was coming up with a stage name. Sofia Vergara is 51 years old today, the Colombian-American actress from Modern Family. Jessica Simpson, Texas gal, is 43 years old today. Do we see much of Jessica Simpson anymore? She was all over. She was like an early reality TV star and a singer and everything else. And I don't know if we've seen her since
despite
that
her
Dukes of Hazzard movie, right? Yeah. Despite her best. And one for Aaron here, because you got to give it up to the science and engineering and people that had an impact on music. Nikola Tesla, the Serbian-American physicist and engineer, was born this day in 1856. And I say this because if anybody's going to drive a Tesla before the rest of us, it's going to be Aaron.
Well, I certainly can't afford one right now.
No, not on a radio salary. Not a chance.
I thought you were going to go to the band Tesla.
I thought he might too. Yeah, or, you know, just something else that Tesla did, you know, that maybe there's a Moog synthesizer that wouldn't be, you know, responsible or possible without Tesla. But
well, I mean, yeah, he definitely paved the way for a lot of electronics and is comparable to what can I think of his name now? Light bulb inventor Edison. Yeah.
The Edison Tesla rivalry is, I mean, that's battle bots for the ultimate nerds here. The number one song this day in 1965 was from the Rolling Stones. say, and I didn't cue it up here, but you know, some remakes work, some don't. I actually kind of like the Devo remake in the mid 1980s. Have to see if we can find that later on. I can't get me no. On this day in 1925, the Scopes trial in Dayton, Tennessee, the so-called monkey trial of John Scopes, a young high school science teacher accused of teaching evolution. Kristen, it just comes back to what we were saying in our last segment, ever vigilant, because there will always be, you know, zealots and folks who think that science is, you know, not right or something like that, who will be against the teaching of, you know, facts and truth, and or even just theories, the ability to talk about theories that may run counter to current beliefs. You know, you have to keep an open mind, and some people will actually put you on trial for trying to keep an open mind.
Mm-hmm. That noisy minority, mm-hmm. that just means that those of us are the quiet majority. We have to, you know, continue to use our voices and push back.
That's right. And one more song from 2004, American Idol winner Fantasia hit number one on this day. On this day in 2008, by simply tapping an app button on an iPhone, music fans could finally find out, what's that song? It was called Shazam, a free smartphone app that premiered this day in 2008, the first music recognition service of its kind, using a phone's microphone to listen to any song and then identifying it. Interestingly enough, I've never used Shazam. Right about that time or shortly thereafter, somebody told me about SoundHound, and I've been using that ever since. Not for any reason of preference. It's just, you know, that's the first thing that I stumbled onto. And I'm sure there are others. I don't know. Maybe you guys use something completely different, or maybe you don't use it at all. I use SoundHound all the time to try to figure out, what is that song, or what are the lyrics, you know?
I use Shazam. I'm a Shazammer.
Okay.
I never downloaded Shazam, but for a long time now it's been integrated in Snapchat. So now, just like if you are going to use a filter on Snapchat of like one of the weird ones that messes with your face and you just hold your finger over your face, same thing where if you hear music, hold your finger on there and then it'll tell you what song it is.
Seriously, I did not mm-hmm. know that. I use Snapchat like every
Siri
day.
Siri does that too.
Oh, Siri does it now too?
Yeah, now she's listening to me, but yeah, Siri does Shazam.
See, that's again showing my advanced age. I've never activated Siri. I get annoyed when Siri shows up on my watch. I always think of that old Saturday Night Live skit, you know, the kind of the Siri for old people. Like, how many people did Satchel Paige strike out last night? Siri says Satchel Paige is dead.
It's one of those names you got to be careful saying, but there's one that's worse that I'm not going to say.
No, don't, for goodness sakes. So I like these apps. Again, I just wish they weren't listening all the time, but that's kind of the price you pay for the convenience. We've got these smart speakers, and heck, Aaron, we haven't even done the commercial in the longest time where you can say something to your smart speaker. Again, that name that starts with an A, and if I say it, it'll screw up everybody's smart speaker, but say, hey, you play 93.5 The Tap or whatever, and it will.
It does still work.
They're everywhere, and I should just get used to it.
I love how we were so concerned in 1984 about Big Brother, and now we cannot live without Big Brother in our houses.
Totally embrace it. Yep. And I'll be there too, eventually. Just some of us take a little longer. Let's take a break for news and weather, and when we come back in our next hour, we'll talk about Congressman Mike Gallagher playing with Barbies. We'll be back. You're up north.